Again, I'd like to welcome our listeners back to part two of the our interview with Joe Alessi here. We've been talking about his dad and his granddad and about how there was a lot of trumpet playing in the Alessi family. And Joe was going to be a next in a line of trumpet players, but didn't turn out that way. And welcome back, Joe, and tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I've maybe some people might know the story already, but, you know, the trombone was the last thing on my mind. The trumpet connection was just to be like my father, you know, and I wanted to, you know, just like Tiger Woods wanted to do what his father did. His father was a golf teacher and knew golf, and he started his son on, learning how to swing at, you know, pretty much, I think when he was one or two. But, you know, this, when my father started me on the trumpet at age four, I just, you know, it was like a little kid just wanting, looking up to his dad and saying, wow, you know, this is the coolest thing.
So do you remember the first few notes that came out of your trumpet? Do you remember how it went?
Well, I remember A Tune a Day. That was the book I had.
Sure.
And
did you
remember going through the book and understanding music pretty understanding rhythm and the way my father would instruct it. He knew how to start beginners, which
yeah,
was
but,
a real gift.
But what I want to know is, was it tough? Was it hard for you? Were you getting a good sound? Do you have any memory?
How do I know? I mean, that was...
You were four.
I'm not sure if I knew that, Bob, back
you were
then.
Five. Well, I mean, I remember when I started trumpet when I was 10, I remember I got a scale out pretty well, and it had a pretty good sound.
I really can't tell you that. I mean, I know that, I know I progressed pretty rapidly. I went through the Tune a Day and the Rubank books and starting out with Arbenz and Schlossberg and little solos. I remember playing Billy Boy, for my, I guess it was the first grade class.
So you're like 5, 6 years old at this point.
Yeah, something like that. Six or seven years old, somewhere. 6 years old, yeah. When I played Billy Boy. Had to stand up in front of the whole class.
Like show and tell? Like show and tell?
Show and tell, exactly. Show and tell. Yeah. And so, you know, it was shocking to when my father... Now, the way this happened was, is the leading to the trombone, was the result of high register on the trumpet. And, the, you know... you know, at age 7 or so, or 8, you know, who knows if you're going to have a high register. But my father had a feeling that this was going to be a problem. And
well, your chops are too big for a trumpet mouthpiece. I mean, that's the way they always looked to me. Isn't that basically what it boiled down to?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it boiled down to. I think just like, you know, if you don't wear a size 7 shoe, if you have a size 9 foot, you know, that type of thing.
Now, see, I remember, I studied with your dad, and I remember his chops. His upper lip, you know, was not protruded outwards. It was wrapped under, so he would not be shoving a lot of lip into a trumpet mouthpiece. That's probably why he had a good sound and played well. Whereas your chops are a little more spread out, it seems to me.
Exactly. Everybody's chops are different, and, you know, for me, it wasn't in the cards really to play trumpet because I would just struggle to play against the high register. And, you know, I would have to, in order to get a sound on the trumpet, I had to roll my lips in, you know, to roll them in. And that to me, you know, now that I play the trombone, I realize that, oh, this was such a natural instrument for me.
Yeah, that would have been impossible. Now, the trumpet worked out a little bit better for your brother Ralph. He's a distinguished jazz trumpet player living in your city as well. And your mom, I'm sorry to divert, but I want to give people a bigger picture of your family here, the world that you were living in at this time. Your mother sang opera with the Metropolitan Opera in New York, and that's where she met your father. Do you remember your mom singing when you were a little kid? Do you have any memory of that?
Oh, all the time. Well, she sang to me when I was an infant. And I remember her singing to me a lot. I think when I was, well, I don't know. I mean, early on, I remember her singing to me. And then she would vocalize pretty much every day. So. And
your dad loved to hear her vocalize, right?
Yes, I did too. It was. She had a beautiful voice.
Me
and
too.
She still does.
She still does. She has a beautiful voice.
Yeah, and she her pitch is excellent. So.
Yes, and one of the things I like about her is she sings softly. She can knock a wall over, but she sings softly, very beautifully.
And yes,
she's very
yes,
beautiful.
And I have an old record of hers when she won national competition in I think the late 40s or early 50s.
Well, that was how she got into the Met. That was a competition in Michigan. Isn't that right?
Well, yeah, she was the regional winner for the it's a thing called the Auditions of the Air, sponsored by the Metropolitan Opera, and it's a competition, and then they pick regional winners from all around the United States, and then you compete live on the radio with the other finalists from around the country, and then she was the national winner, and that's how she got her contract with the Met.
She was the national winner. She was probably 18 years old, or not even that, probably.
Well, somewhere around there, 20 maybe. But she set a record, I think, for the most performances by a rookie at the Met in 1 year, in one season.
And they were grooming her for primary roles, and before she had to move on for I think health reasons, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yeah, she a couple things happened all at one time. Well, she met my father, and my father was really keen on starting a family. And at the same time, she sang quite a bit, maybe too much, and she had to give her voice a rest. Mm-hmm. And during the time that she rested, she'd fallen in love with the thought of having a family. And
the rest is history, as they say.
The rest is history. She had no interest to go back, because by that time they had already moved out west.
Right.
And
so let's get back to the trombone here. So your father says, look, we're going to switch you to the trombone. Did he just show up one day with a trombone and you were like, what's this piece of crap? Or tell us exactly how that happened.
Well, my father was an excellent brass teacher, and he believed in matching the mouthpiece, the size of the mouthpiece, to someone's face. And so since I struggled on the trumpet and the high register, he assumed that I would have trouble with this as I got older. He just felt the trombone was a better fit. Of course, I had no interest in the trombone at all. So that day, he brought it home, and I was mortified to see the instrument. And said, I asked him, "What is this? I don't understand why you're doing this." And he said, "All right, well, I'd just like you to try it." And tears started flowing, and then. So I never really tried it. And he said, "Okay, I'll just leave it here." And then a couple of weeks later, after playing something from Rubank, or I don't know really what it was, but really struggling to get the high register and getting emotionally wrapped up, which is the last thing you want to do when you play a brass instrument, he came in, he could see I was totally frustrated, and he said, "Just try this trombone, please. And if you don't like it, I promise I'll take it away. You'll never see it again." I said, "Really?" And, okay. And so I tried the horn, and I went right up to a high B flat, no problem. And that was the day I started playing trombone. And I had to figure out. I mean, this thing had a slide, and it was. I loved the pushing valves. That was something that was much more interesting to me than moving the slide. But he was very smart. He got me a very good teacher, a very patient guy. His name is Barry Ehrlich, and Barry was a freelance trombonist in town, in San Francisco Bay Area, And he got me interested in the trombone day by day, or every lesson. I became more and more intrigued by it.
Tell me a little bit about what I know I've heard you say about how you were trying to wrap your lip in because it was too big of a chops for the trumpet, and then you had to sort of, you realized you didn't have to do that when you started playing the trombone. Is that? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, everybody's face is different. You know, it could have been, it could be that if I stuck with the trumpet, I would have figured out how to play in the high register on the trumpet. You know, we'll never know that, but in order to fit my lips into the trumpet mouthpiece at that time, you know, I had to roll them in, and I believe the fact that I had that experience with the trumpet over time, they naturally rolled back out, and to the point where I would say even in my 20s, they were still doing that. And my embouchure became more and more relaxed. And so that really continued to make my high register improve, even in my 20s.
I want to understand this. A couple years as a child of rolling your chops in, it really took you years and years and years for that habit to naturally sort of go away?
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. Because my natural set is to have everything just like saying the letter M. You know, if you say the letter M and purse your lips, that's sort of what everybody's natural chop tendencies are, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is some very successful full-lipped guys can play. You know. Let's take a look at some trumpet players. Look at John Faddis. John Faddis, you know, he's a trumpet player that certainly disproves that because he has a full chops and the guy has the most extraordinary high register in the business.
Right.
So that's not really true for everybody, but in my case, it was. And
well, there's a couple observations I wanted to make about your dad. You and he are built similar. You're kind of built like a fire plug, but his chops are totally different than yours. His lip does not roll out. His upper lip is fairly thin, and the fleshy part of it, I remember because I studied trumpet with him. He doesn't have that, so he doesn't have a lot of lips to shove into a mouthpiece. So, you know, you were sort of your father's son. You know, you modeled yourself after your father. Yeah, you look like him, you act a little bit like him, but your chops are entirely different. So I can see how that would have set up a situation where when you played a trumpet as a kid, it did not turn out the way your dad did, because your dad, you know, got a beautiful sound and a wonderful high range, probably because his chops fit a trumpet mouthpiece when he's saying the letter M, like you say.
And also, I think, when you start somebody that young, you know, when I started trumpet, the cornet at age 5, I think emotionally, if you're not really ready to deal with certain problems of high register and so forth, and I didn't probably handle that well at all. And I think a lot of people don't start brass instruments until they're perhaps into their teens.
Oh.
You know?
When their musculature has developed a little bit more.
Right, exactly, and things are more established.
Right.
So I think for a young kid like myself at that age, I didn't really know what was going on,
mm-hmm.
and so I just took the cue from my father.
Right.
And then when it did work in the upper register on the trombone, I said, "Oh, this must be."
It's fantastic.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, the only other thing I wanted to say was that, you know, I studied with your dad, and your dad is a disciplinarian. He's a great, great fatherly figure, but he could be scary. And it's a tender moment to me to think that he sort of crept into the room with a trombone and said, "Hey, you know, I just want you to have a look at this." I mean, it sounds to me like your dad handled it carefully because he knew you might be really upset.
Believed him when he said he would take it away. You know, I believe that he would have done that. So
you trusted your
father.
And
I still believe. Oh yeah, I still believe he would have taken it away. If he said that, "I promise I'll take it away," he wouldn't have pushed it after that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So in other words, the fact that you could play up fluently into the high register made the trombone seem like a whole lot more appealing to you.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
And you know, And I did have more conversations with some other trombonists who started on cornet and started on trumpet. And so I do believe that starting on cornet for me helped me play in the upper register on the trombone. So that experience made it easier to do that.
How so?
Well, think about it. When you're playing a cornet or a trumpet, you know, you're buzzing the frequency that's an octave higher. Mm-hmm. So when you go to a trombone, that memorization of that frequency is still there.
Huh.
And so I think it was easier for me just to... A high B-flat was like a low B-flat on a trumpet.
Right.
B-flat concert.
Right.
So...
You've also mentioned, and this seems amazing to me, that you know a fair number of brass players that started out on valved instruments. I don't want you to name any names, but do you really hold that's I think you mentioned something like in elementary school there's more trumpets than trombones, and trumpets are smaller and they're just easier to hand out. Do you think that a lot of trombone players started on trumpet or euphonium or?
Well, yeah, I mean every student and when it's when you're in band and that first day of band, you know, when you're in fifth grade or sixth grade or whatever, you know, I think everybody wants to play trumpet. Nobody
yeah,
wants
right.
to play trombone.
Yeah, right.
And maybe there's a few strays that will want to play the trombone.
Gave Mark Balky a trombone because he had long arms.
Yeah, right. Exactly, I remember that guy. Yeah, and then when all the trumpets run out, oh, we don't have any more trumpets. All we have is a trombone, and that's a story that I hear a lot.
Wow.
From how people start on the trombone, and you know, also nobody wants to play larger instruments. They don't want to be sitting there lugging a larger case.
Right.
So young kids always pick the smallest instrument. You know.
It's a terrible prejudice against the trombone. Just terrible.
It really is. It is. Yeah.
So you're on the trombone and you can play up to a high B flat, and that's great. But still, that's a long ways from getting excited about the instrument. I mean, do you remember a specific incident, you know, when you really, you know, decided you were going to take an interest in the trombone?
I think it was when my father brought home. He was very smart because he knew what was hot out there on the market, but he brought home this Chicago Symphony low brass section recording that pretty much every trombone player in the world has. And that's when I started to investigate what the trombone's role was in the orchestra. I had no idea before that. I mean, I knew something about the trumpet from the excerpts that were done at the house with my father and his students, but couldn't even imagine what the trombone would do. And that really opened up a whole new world for me.
And we're going to hear all about that whole new world in part three of the Alessi interview, which will be coming up real soon. I'd like to invite our listeners who would like to download this interview as a podcast. You can do so at www.robertelkier.com. That's RobertElkJer.com. And I want to thank Joe for a terrific time here, and look forward to chatting some more in the future.